How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Second hour, Darren Dotnick, Chase and D-Base, ESPN 102.5, The Game, Darren McFarland, Willie Dotnick, Derek Mason with you, Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans for ESPN, ESPN.com, his podcast, Talking with TD, and of course he makes appearances on all the live platforms on this radio station. He now joins us. Teron, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Well, fantastic. I'll tell you what, if the Titans are looking for speed, it looks like there's a lot of speed at the Combine this weekend. Man, especially if you want to take somebody from Baylor. Pumping out the times, huh?
Yeah, Baylor, they always have guys run well, man. That's a really good program there that they have, so it doesn't surprise me. But there's more to it than just speed, you know. You got to be able to do other things.
Preach. D-Mace had a wonderful rant about that last week.
He sure did.
And Chris Sanders was right with him, too. Just, you know, how it's one tool, but it's not the whole picture.
Right. Yeah, we get so caught up in you know, hey, a guy needs speed to be a deep threat, and that's not necessarily true. And also, it doesn't always transfer, you know. Some guys are fast on the track, slow on the field, but there's just something to when somebody's chasing you. Some guys have a different degree that they could, a different gear they could kick into.
Yeah. I want to start with the offensive line. This is a critical week. By tomorrow, they have got to, if they're going to tag somebody, it's got to be done by tomorrow. But let's start with the offensive line because last week we had Jim Nagy on, who is the executive director for the Senior Bowl. And we asked him about Dylan Radins. And, my goodness, he was certainly glowing about him. It was like the first time I heard somebody really like – I mean, I know it was a popular pick when it happened, Toronto. I remember us talking about it, and there were a lot of people saying, oh, good pick, you know. But this guy, again, went kind of over the top about Dylan Radins. And I know Mike Vrabel was asked about it in Indy. As you were there, you know that. And he said he's not ready, but it's our job to make him ready. But how vitally important is it for him to be ready and to be a starter on day one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be imperative because, A, you have the right tackle position where David Quesenberry is a restricted free agent. And then, B, you have the possibility of Roger Saffold being released. Now, he got most of his work at left guard. So if they decide to make that cap move to save that 10.5 by releasing Roger Saffold, it's a tough move, but if that's one that, you know, the dollars and cents dictates, then they need him to be able to step up and start. And I think Mike Vrabel said it, you know, he may not be ready now, but that's a challenge that he's issuing to Keith Taylor and the strength staff. And, you know, Keith Taylor, obviously the, or Keith Carter, excuse me, obviously the O-line coach. So, It's really important because they're going to need him at one position or the other. And it's a second-round pick, and, you know, this team has not had the best options as far as getting contributions from their early picks. So this is one that they really need one from.
Ah, here we go. We see first tag. Browns.
Yeah, David Njoku.
Yeah, this guy you talked about with us. So cross him off the list. You surprised by that or no?
Dalton Schultz, no, not at all. Just in hearing how Andrew Berry spoke about him at the Combine and how he said that that's a guy that they wanted to, you know, make sure they had back. And they interestingly enough, kind of hinted at being good around Baker Mayfield, just in a way that Mike Vrabel and the Titans, you know, want to be great around Tannehill. So this is something that will help them do that.
Did he not at one point tell the Browns he wanted out of there and he wanted to be traded?
He did. He did at one point, and that was, you know, after the Austin Hooper deal. But they run a lot of 12 personnel, and, you know, he's a necessary weapon for them if they want to be right on offense.
It's just to clarify, guys. See, so a guy asked for – you don't have to always trade him just because they want to be traded. So anyway, I just wanted to put that on the record. Yeah, he did ask for a trade, and they didn't trade him. Now they tagged him. So how is the offensive line going to play out? Because that is going to be a big, you know, part of the shuffle, the shuffling to make all this work. Is something's going to have to happen with the offensive line, right, to make all this work. So I think we can all identify center and over to the left is everything in question. So ultimately, Teron, how do you think it's going to play out?
Yeah, I think they're going to look to rework some things with Taylor Lewan's deal. I don't see any way that he's not back. And center, I think Ben Jones is a guy that they'll manage to bring back. But I tell you what, there's some good centers in this draft. Obviously, everybody talks about Lindenbaum, but you got Cam Jurgens from Nebraska. My favorite center, Cole Strange from Tennessee Chattanooga, who we'll have on Talking with TD in the near future. Those are guys that you could get that could come in. Strange would be more of a guy that would probably not start right away. So I do think Ben Jones is the guy they bring back. Saffold is the magic one. You know, that's the one to watch, because there's such a huge cap savings if they do move on. And unfortunately, you know, the injuries, you know, if it wasn't keeping him out of the game overall, he was missing time in the game. And, you know, when you look at all those things, it can dictate, you know, moving on.
So do you anticipate John Robinson using the tag at all in the next 24 hours?
You know, I've heard that there's a possibility that they use it on Landry, but more to just have exclusive negotiating rights, not to have him go on the market. But, I mean, information is so up and down. I don't think – I'm almost positive that he doesn't get away from the Titans from, you know, conversations that I had in Indy. They really want to bring him back.
Now, Teron, at the combine, we saw a lot of fast times. One guy in particular, he didn't run because of injury. Jameson Williams out of Alabama. Mm-hmm. I think he's, if not the best receiver, he's a top two or three receiver in this year's draft. Now, obviously, because of the injury, it might drop him a little. Could that be a play? Because the Titans need another receiver. Could that be a play that the Titans make if indeed he falls to them that late?
I think it's definitely possible, but this team is geared up to where they have to – they need immediate impact. Like, I don't know that they have the luxury of being able to wait for a guy to help out, you know, whether that be late November or December, as Williams is projected to make his way back to the football field. So it's possible. I don't think it's likely. I think, you know, the one slam dunk, if he's there when they pick, is Chris Olave. That's the one I think is the slam dunk pick at receiver.
Now, he did, I think it was either John Robinson or Vrabel, they did allude to there being a lot of rush ends or pass rushers in this year's draft. I know you said that there's a high possibility that they tag Landry just to try to work out a deal. If indeed that doesn't happen, because that's still a lot of money to commit to a guy. If you don't work out a deal, you're on the hook for $17, $18 million for 1 year. If indeed they don't do that, do you think then they go and draft one of those pass rushers?
Yeah, I think they get a pass rusher regardless. There's a few guys. I mean, look at David Ajabo at 26. That's definitely somebody that could come in and help. I think when you look at Myjai Sanders, he'll be a later, probably like a day three, late day two pick. Those are options. But the there's two for me, and I talked to a guy who's a film evaluator for Talking with TD. I talked to him on my show last week. And he mentioned Arnold Ebukadi, who is from Penn State. Now, if you watch him, he wears number 17, so that way you'll know who it is. And that guy is a perfect match because he's very strong against the run. He's a powerful pass rusher. He can put his hand in the dirt. So you know how they like to use multiple fronts. He could stand up and rush the passer too. He would be a really good option. But they would have to try to manufacture a day two, you know, a second-round pick to be able to take him. But then there's another guy, Sam Williams. I talked to him at the combine. He murdered the NFLPA or the Shrine Week. He had no business being there. He's typically a first-round prospect, but there are some background things. He had a sexual battery charge, and that caused him to be suspended, but the charges were dropped. He was reinstated. He said he talked to teams about that extensively at Shrine Week. He ended up at the Senior Bowl and talked to some teams there. The Titans have shown interest in him, so that is another option. And he's a guy out of Ole Miss. He had 12.5 sacks last year. I think he would be a really good fit just as far as a situational pass rusher. So there are guys, and those are just, you know, a few that I mentioned. There's a bunch of them, you know, so there'll be options for them.
Now, is there a top guy that disappointed you in this year's NFL Combine? I don't think Burks from Arkansas, the receiver, I don't think he ran fast or his three-cone drill was fast at all. Vertical wasn't what it should have been. So to me, that's one of the guys that didn't help himself in this year's Combine. Is there a guy that didn't help themselves that you saw?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you with Burks. And it's funny because talking to a lot of people, and this is one of the things I hate about the Combine, by the way, but a lot of people, I never had him as wide receiver one, right? I'm with you on the Jameson Williams side of things. But in talking to a lot of people, they watched him work out at the Combine, and now they're like, oh, well, I can't have him as my number one receiver. And that's the problem with the Combine. You have to trust the tape. I know he didn't show the explosive numbers and things that you want, but you got to watch the tape. And when it comes time to get the football in the end zone and make big plays, he does that. So I think that's what you have to look at. But he would be the one that I would say probably didn't help himself out a lot. And by the way, D. Mason, check out of Western Michigan, the guy by the name of Sky Moore. Okay. That kid is a player. You're going to love his releases. And I talked to him about it. I asked him just point blank, like, how do you make it such a habit of undressing DBs when they come up to press you? So he gave a good answer, and he performed well at the Combine.
Well, that speed didn't matter, D-Mace.
It doesn't, but he didn't. What I was really concerned about was his three-cone drill and his vertical.
Right.
At that, he's 6'2", 6'1", 6'2". His three-cone wasn't good at all. And that shows the ability to get in and out of your breaks quickly.
Yeah.
So, and then his vertical wasn't. You expect a guy that tall, his vertical and explosion to be a lot better. And it just wasn't.
Well, to your point, though, I think that's – help me with this. And, Tron, you can probably speak. I think it was like Justin Jefferson is really – where he turned heads with that drill. I think that's the one that you're talking about, D. Mason.
The three-cone drill.
Yeah, he crushed it last year at the Combine.
Yeah, there's a lot of receivers that did that. But ironically, with that, just to D. Mason's point, I talked to Burks at the Combine about things that he wanted to work on, and getting in and out of breaks was one of the things. So it just kind of, you know, correlates as far as the testing to his areas for improvement.
By the way, Sky Moore, a 4.41 was his 40-yard time. We'll come back more talking with TD on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here with Teron Davenport, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are looking back on the Combine and looking ahead to some of the moves that will be coming up around the corner. Tough, tough decisions to be made for the Titans. So, Teron, as we sort of put a bow on the Combine, what is the consensus now as everybody sort of sifts through everything? Did it affect how the draft as a whole is viewed in terms of just overall talent depth? From year to year, there's always some opinions. Is this a good draft, mediocre draft? How would you assess it?
It's a stacked draft, and I think when you look at that, what I mean is there isn't necessarily a consensus number one player. I mean, for heaven's sake, you have offensive linemen, you know, kind of vying for the first-round pick, and that's just because of the situation the Jaguars are in. But I think if you look, like, top to bottom, just the depth, and you look at the pass rusher position, I mean, you could really, really – help your team out by getting a couple of solid pass rushers in this draft class. You look at the tight end position, it is so deep. And, you know, the guy I was telling D. Mason about, Jelani Woods at 6'6", 259. He ran a 4.61, you know, and he had 24 reps on the bench with an 84-inch wingspan. And, you know, that's a guy you could probably get on day two. It's deep as far as, you know, all 3 days of the draft, you could get impact players, and that's something that, you know, isn't always the case. And I think, you know, the receiver position is deep as well. It's not going to get the flash and the attention that most drafts do, because the top end part of the quarterback position, there really isn't a guy that you say, hey, look, I got a top 10 pick, I need a quarterback, no question, this is the one I'm taking.
What do you think is the first thing that we will see with the Titans? I know this is, you don't have a crystal ball, Teron, but everybody's so anxious to see what decisions they make. It's going to be here pretty soon. Is there one thing that you think will get the dominoes running?
I think it's the moves, the cap.
Yeah, is there, do you feel like there's one thing that will, one move that they're going to start with to try to get that set so they can do A, B, and C after that? Or do you think they're working on several things and any one of them could be the first thing that hits?
Yeah, I think it'll be several things, and I think, you know, a combination of Jack Rabbit Jenkins release, Kendall Lamb release, you know, that's, you're talking about $10 million right there, and then obviously Saffold. So I think those are the ones that, in order to spend the money, like, you got to get the money to spend, and so those are the things that have to happen.
For people that may, you know, follow this closely, but they may not have all the particulars, what are our time frames here? When will we start to see this?
Well, the franchise tag is that deadline is today at 3 p.m. Mm. And then, you know, within the next week, you'll start to see a bunch of things happen, because that's like, you know, you're kind of coming around the bend and getting ready to really start going. So I would say within the next week, that's when you'll see things really start to cook.
Okay, so with the tag, I think all of us have thought all along that it makes a lot of sense to put the tag on, even if you're not sure exactly what will happen after that. You don't want to just set him free. So would it have been done already if it were going to be done? Are you starting to wonder if they're actually going to do it, or do you feel like it's going to happen by 3 o'clock with Landry?
Well, John Robinson said he felt like they had time, and they were, you know, looking at other things that they would like to do with Landry. So that tells me that they're looking to avoid tagging him because they want to try to work out a deal. But if they can't get a deal hammered out, then the tag is something that they're, you know, that they're going to do.
Because they can tag him and then make a deal, right?
Exactly. You could tag him and then make a deal, and that's the whole point of doing that. That tag is to get exclusive negotiating rights, because any pass rusher, they hit the open field. I mean, you look, Carl Lawson, he had 5.5 sacks, showed a lot of promise, but, I mean, we're talking, what, 4 years, 50-plus million, you know what I mean? Because he hit the open market, and that's something I think the Titans are would like to avoid, because I believe if Landry hits the open market, you're looking at 4 years, $60 to $70 million.
No question about it. So if you – you know, they're certainly tied to Bud Dupree now, but how would you evaluate the two? You know, just take the money aside. If you're just evaluating edge rushers, are they basically the same category? Maybe not the best of the best, but very good.
I think they fall in the very good category, but it's just like, you know, when you were a kid, right? You had the toy, right? Voltron. You know what I mean? And separately, they may not have been the outside of Simmons. You know. Separately, they're not exactly the number one, but together that front four is ridiculous, and I think that's something that team is well aware of. In fact, I asked Mike Vrabel, I said, not from a front office standpoint, but from a coaching standpoint, how important is it to keep that front four together? And he began to talk about how all of their skill sets, like, they have different skill sets, but they complement each other really well, and it's a really strong unit. And that's why I applied a Voltron, you know, example, because together they are really almost unstoppable. You saw that in the Bengals game.
Now, TD, quickly before we get you out of here, obviously this weekend there was a report with Aaron Rodgers saying these are basically 3 or 4 teams that he would like to go to or are interested in the Tennessee Titans, along with Denver, and I think there was another team was a part of this. How much validity or truth do you give that what came out this weekend?
Yeah, I don't believe the Titans are a hands-down team that should be mentioned along with the others. I mean, look, John Robinson is a GM, right? Or anybody as a GM. If Aaron Rodgers, like there's talk of him becoming available, you absolutely have to look at it and have a plan together if that's something that should come across your table. Otherwise, you're being just irresponsible. So did they talk about it? Yeah, absolutely. They talked about it, but is that something that they reached out to the Packers about? No. And as I said before, you know, when I reported last month, it's not something that they feel is on the table at the time. It's not something they feel is at an option right now. And they're poised to move forward with Ryan Tannehill and work on ways to be great around him. And they feel like their formula is able to go against, you know, the Joe Burrows, the Patrick Mahomes, et cetera, the Lamar Jacksons.
Teron, good stuff as always. And looking forward to seeing the next move. I guess by 3 o'clock, we're going to know something about what's happening with the direction of Harold Landry. But in the meantime, great work on the combine as always. If you go to Teron's Twitter, all kinds of information there, and then you can, of course, connect to his page on ESPN.com. Great information if you like to delve into all of the nuts and bolts of the combine and how it affects the Titans. Teron, we'll talk to you again here very soon.
Sure. Appreciate you guys. Take it easy.
Yep. All right. That's Teron Davenport talking with TD. A little bit around the corner. This is what I know. We got talking Big Orange at noon. We'll have a bubble update for you. And Michael McCarron from the Nashville Predators, 2 goals and 2 assists on Saturday night's rout of the Sharks. He's going to come on with us at 1 o'clock. And it's a massive week for the Predators for sure. Big game against Dallas tomorrow night. Stay tuned. We're coming back.
All right, we do this from time to time, or actually a lot. It's time to give something away. And we don't give you the heads up. That's the fun part. You just have to be listening. We're going to give you 2 tickets to see the Predators and the Stars tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena.
That's a good game.
That's why you keep
big
this
game
this on, because you never know. What fun is it to tell you to listen at a certain time? How about you just stay listening? So all you have to do is answer this question to Elijah Campbell at our Hillside Medical Game studio on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is the question. Jason Robertson, the Stars, got a big win last night in Minnesota over the Wild. He has strung together back-to-back hat-trick games. He's not even 23 years old. He is now the 4th player to do back-to-back hat-tricks in the last 30 years before 23. He's only the 4th player to do it before they were 23. The last player in the league to do it was in 2016-17, a player under 23 with back-to-back hat-trick games. Name that player, and you're going to the Stars and the Preds tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. 615-737-1025. That is our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Want me to take a guess? Safe to say? It's not Dennis Rodman.
Well, I was going to say, I would have been disappointed if you didn't say Dennis Rodman.
Dennis was not really a scorer, even in basketball. So,
but in college, he averaged over 30 points.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so he could score if you.
I've never firsthand asked. I watched that 30 for 30 that they did on him, which was really interesting. Interesting from a lot of different angles. But I wanted to ask some of the guys from Belmont and Lipscomb back in those days, Casey Alexander and Philip Hutchison, and they had some great teams that were national title contenders at NAIA, and Dennis Rodman was there. I've never asked them directly if they – I don't know if they crossed paths, if they watched him. I know they were aware of him because they were the best of the best back then. I'd love to have that conversation sometime.
Well, it wasn't Dennis Rodman. Dang
but,
it.
Derek, you are correct. It was not – Dennis Rodman. So
it's going to be Dennis Rodman one day.
Mike Lynch did call in, and he did not guess Dennis Rodman because that would be the wrong answer. So Mike is going to go to the Predator-Stars game because he said Philip Forsberg.
I thought that was the answer.
Philip Forsberg.
I thought there was a reason you were asking that.
Was indeed the last player to do it. Back-to-back hat-trick games before the age of 23. Eric Lindros did it before him in 94-95 season, and Timu Solani did it in 92, 93. So those are the four players in the last 30 years, before 23 years of age, stringing together back-to-back hat tricks. So Jason Robertson and Philip Forsberg in pretty good company, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Jason Robertson has turned into a budding superstar. He's the guy now that is leading the charge. He and Roope Hintz, and then they've got – that allows the Stars now to have Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin be the second wave, the second line. And then they're having – they're getting an outstanding season from Joe Pavelski at age whatever he is, 37, 38, something like that. So put it all together, and the Stars are as hot as any team. 9-2-1 since the All-Star break. Remember, they beat the Predators in a game that was tied at 3 in the third period in Dallas right after the All-Star break. That kind of sent the Predators going in the wrong direction, sent the Stars going in the right direction, and now the two are basically deadlocked in the standings. They've leapfrogged back and forth the last couple of days, Dallas winning again yesterday to go back in front. So you can't say enough about how important this game is tomorrow night. It's going to be massive.
It's coming down.
I keep
to
saying
the
massive.
End.
I got to find out other ways to say massive, big, large, important,
gargantuan,
it's gargantuan, important. Gigantic, yeah.
It's
mammoth.
It's a critical game.
Critical.
Yes.
Critical week.
Week.
Critical. Yeah. Well, there's no doubt. And really, 2 weeks, because after this week, mm-hmm. you know, on the horizon, you've got a trip to Anaheim and L.A. for back to backs. You've got more games against playoff teams. I mean, it's just one after another after another. It's
you
not going to slow down.
I'll just take it a step further. Like, these next 25 games are big. They really are. Yeah. I'll just take it a step further.
This one's a little bigger.
The
next
25 are huge for the rest of the season, you know, on how this plays out. There you go, folks. You can't get that anywhere else. Mike, go enjoy the game tomorrow night. Good job by you. Looks like the Browns are going to tag David Njoku.
Hmm.
Looks like possibly Dalton Schultz might get tagged in Dallas. So a couple of tight ends getting tagged. And, of course, the report came out on Friday that looks like the Cowboys are going to release Amari Cooper.
Well, teams understand, and I don't understand why the Titans didn't understand this last year. Teams understand how critical and viable the tight end position has become, and how
does everybody
controlling
know that?
Controlling the middle that? Of the field is
you
a
sure
must.
Everybody knows that.
I mean, teams that got good teams that have those tight ends, they try to keep them. Now during free agency, now if they choose to leave, that's a different story. But they try to keep. They try their best to keep them, because it's the tight end position. If you had that tight end, is an extension of the wide receivers, and then it's an extension of the offensive line.
I'm just asking. You said basically the league has figured out it's an important position, but did this team, did the Titans feel like, you know, did they feel that way when they went into this season with what they had?
I don't think so. That's what I'm saying. That's why I said it behooves me to think that the Titans didn't realize that. It's like everybody realizes that the tight end position is a viable position, is a critical position in this day and age passing game. You know, and for them to now, again, you know, when the move was made to not sign Janu, everybody, oh, good riddance, he's gone. I don't understand why they said that. Well, look what he did in New England. You want me to tell you why he did that in New England? There's two reasons. One is he went to a new team. He's still trying to figure his way out. And for some reason, when you go to New England, because of their playbook and the things they like to do, it takes you a little bit to get yourself acclimated to the playbook. So I'm pretty sure it took him over half the season to get things going. Because, again, you don't have the time in the offseason You know, you don't have that time to put in an offseason that you had 5-6 years ago. You know, to me, that was probably the main reason that he didn't, you know, play the way that I thought he should have. And maybe this upcoming season, it will be a lot better because he will be comfortable with the playbook now. He'd be comfortable with the quarterback, the system. And for people to say, good riddance, he's gone. Well, how did that turn out for y'all?
Well, do you think that they overestimated? I mean, I think the answer we know in hindsight. But do you think that they this is how I feel. I think they really thought that Firkser would be better.
Firkser wasn't. He was
good in the role that he was in before.
Exactly. He's a good role player.
So maybe they misidentified him as a guy that could play a bigger role.
Exactly. They wanted to try to elevate a number three to a number one. That's what they tried
to do.
In terms of pass catching. He's a good player, but in his role. Did he deserve to be on the Titans team? Yes, because he played a role in what they wanted him to do. But was he the number one guy? No, by far no way. But for some reason, the Titans thought, oh, we can let Janu run walk, and we're going to elevate him to be our number one. Not going to happen in no world.
I give them a little slack because when you say for some reason, the reason is obvious, that they didn't have enough money for everything, so they had to make some choices. You know, where can we try to squeeze up?
They had enough money to bring Janu back. Had enough money to bring Janu back.
But then what would have happened as a result? They don't get Julio? Or
they didn't need Julio.
Well, of course.
Everybody screamed, half of the people
kind of with you on that beforehand. I was asking the questions, shouldn't they just keep Davis and
Janu? I thought they should have kept Davis. That's what I thought.
And I don't know what kind of money situation that would have turned out to be, but the bold move to do the Julio Jones thing definitely had an effect on other parts of the roster there. If you argue that if they didn't have Julio, they could at least kept one of the two, right? Mm-hmm. Jonnu Smith or Corey Davis, probably, right?
Yeah, and if in a perfect world, because of the way the NFL is going, and it has been going the last 4, 5, 6 years, you keep the tight end. Now, you hate to lose Davis, but okay, you lose him, but you keep that guy that controls the middle of the field for you. The middle of the field is critical in this game nowadays. Everything that you see thrown basically is in the middle of the field. So why not keep a guy that has proven not just catching the ball, but also running the ball? And he was a good blocker.
Screen game.
Exactly. Why?
Run after the catch.
That was a move that maybe they bumped heads, and I don't know what it was. But that was a move that I really, truly didn't understand. That was one I didn't understand because you have a long line of really good tight ends come through your organization and you let one of them go. Just let them walk. Maybe they tried to sign him. I don't know. But you let them walk.
Well, you saw what he got paid by New England. I mean, they clearly were not in that market.
They could, again, we always talk about no state income tax. You could have paid him what was equivalent to what he got in New England and still kept him.
I wonder how much we always talk. I feel like we always bring that up on the Predators end of things. I wonder how much the Titans try to. I mean, I wonder how much that is used behind the scenes on their end.
They should be using it.
I don't know if it's used or not, but I'm just saying, you know, because it comes up so much in both of our major sports, hockey and football, that I'm thinking like, okay, if he went off to New England, Their tax bracket is high.
Big time.
In the Northeast.
Big time.
Exactly. So what could you have paid him here that would have been
would have matched that. Yeah. Yes. Now, a player can come back and the agent come back and say, okay, but I know in hockey my salary's guaranteed. In football, my guy might get cut a couple years into a 4-year deal anyway, and so I keep the money for the time being, but I can't guarantee my client that he gets to keep that money because we know how players' contracts work. But I would still use that if I'm the Titans as much as I could.
You probably would.
Even if it's 2 or 3 years, that's still money you keep that you wouldn't keep in other places.
But I'm looking at it from this standpoint too. New England Titans, where are you most likely to get cut after 2 years? Which
New
team?
England.
Exactly.
Hello.
You're more likely to get cut or contract restructure after 2 years in New England. We've seen it happen over
Definitely.
And over. Yes. Why not? And it could have been Janu. I'm not saying it was all Titans. It could have been Janu, you know. But you got a guy here that you drafted. He's really coming into his own. He knows the offense. The quarterback is comfortable. That's his guy. That was Tannehill's guy. He knew he can count on him to catch the ball and to get open. Why would you let him walk? And again, it probably wasn't all the Titans' fault. You know? So.
Well, you know what? He walked. So.
Yeah, he did. Now they got to try to find another tight end.
Yeah, and I don't know how you do that as we're sitting here talking about it. The tight ends are getting tagged or at least it's being speculated they'll get tagged. The deadline is just over 24 hours away. By the way, the NHL trading deadline is 2 weeks from today, so this is a good time of year. March is a good month. There's a lot going on for sure. We'll head east, bring in Vince Ferrara at high noon, but we'll come back. This is what I know to end hour number two. That's next. We do. We want to know what you know. It's pretty easy. You just call in and you tell us what you know. It's an open canvas. A pair of tickets to see Judas Priest at Municipal Auditorium on March 23rd. If you don't win, Derek will take them. He's going.
Mm-hmm.
So call in and take his tickets. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. What do you guys know? What do you know?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. This is what I know. All these fast 40 times that is being run.
They don't mean a hill of beans. don't mean a hill of beans.
Yeah, this is what I know. Just what you said. Don't mean a hill of beans. Because ain't nobody just running 40 yards with nobody in front of them. In shorts. Okay.
I was in Shelbyville, and I saw him, and I wasn't even jovial when I saw him.
Jovial.
Wasn't even jovial. I was out in Shelbyville, and I was trying to get back, and I wasn't even jovial after I saw all those 40 times.
Hey, it doesn't mean anything when somebody lined up in front of you. It doesn't. You know? That kid that ran it from Baylor and all those fast guys from Baylor, how many championships have they won? None. They ain't win not a championship. Okay.
Nada.
Nada. Nada. Not a championship. Okay. That's
that's what you know?
That's what I know.
This is what I know. And I had a good exchange with a top level baseball writer about this. I'm going to bounce this off from other people, but I know that unfortunately this will never happen because of one guy, Marvin Miller, the ghost of Marvin Miller, who led the Major League Baseball Players Union for so long. This is what I know. I think the players would be better off with a salary cap in Major League Baseball. One of the I mean, it's never going to happen. But honestly, if I were the players, I think I would be arguing for a salary cap because it would
That's
be better
hilarious.
For them. Because
hilarious.
What's one of the number one beefs of the players right now? Teams tank. Yeah. There are a lot of teams that decide if we can't win it, we're going to slash it and burn it and just not try to win. The Orioles are a great example. For 5 or 6 years, they don't have the weapons, they don't have the horses, so they just slash payroll, don't pay anybody, and take the revenue-sharing checks. But if you had a salary cap, not only do you have a ceiling, but you have a floor.
A roof.
Yeah, the ceiling
roof is the ceiling.
The ceiling is the roof.
Guys, we've got a ceiling and a roof.
We've got a ceiling and a roof. But why does it work? The NHL players sat out a whole year fighting a salary cap. But you know what? They put a salary cap in, and you know what? Life goes on. They're actually doing okay. And from a competitive balance, teams like the Predators in a smaller market have a chance to compete. Baseball, they're arguing right now a lot over the competitive balance tax, which is the closest thing You know what? The competitive balance tack, only a couple teams get up into that area anyway. So why fight for that when only a couple of teams are going to be affected by that? Why not fight for the dozens of teams that like to stay way down there? If you had a floor, there'd be more money paid to the players. But the players, they will never do that because, you know what? They pride themselves in saying, we don't have a salary cap.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, it's never going to happen. That's part of the reason why they're sitting there.
That horse is gone. It's never coming back.
Oh, that horse is at the glue factory.
Yeah. It's gone.
It's way gone. But I'm with you. I mean, I love it.
A salary cap would be better for the Indians. It'd be better for the Brewers. It'd be better.
It's the
Guardians. From the players, the Guardians.
Who?
Yeah,
who?
The Guardians. Sorry. I pulled a Kelly Holcomb there. Remember, he was... The Redskins, man. It was the Redskins. Wait. Excuse me, Kelly. That's been changed for a couple years now.
They've been the FTs for years, buddy.
Now they're the Commanders.
The Commanders.
The Commanders.
Well, I'm kind of mad because now we're doing two baseball-themed This Is What I Know. But mine will be short and sweet. This Is What I Know. I didn't know that bigger bags was an issue. Did I miss the bigger bags discussion? Bigger bases? So they have apparently agreed on some things. They haven't agreed to play baseball this year, but they've agreed to have bigger bases. This is what I know. I didn't know that was an issue.
Well, the issue
is a heavy discussion piece.
It's just something that would incentivize. It's something that would incentivize, in theory, people stealing more bases, because teams are so good at putting tags on now. You see guys all the time sliding past the base, lifting their finger off for one half second. If you have a bigger base, I think you might have a better chance of having people try to take extra
bases.
There
was a lot of you think, you might, maybe. Yeah. I didn't know this was a discussion piece in baseball. I've missed that whole round table of bigger bases.
This is the problem. They're talking so much about the money stuff. They can't get to the things that are broken about the game, and that's one of them. Nobody tries to steal a base anymore. Yeah. There's less action than there's ever been.
So I'm up for that. Look,
you know me, Darren. I'm Mr. Traditional. I'm up for talking about this stuff. They have got to add some spice and some flavor in the game. But we'll never get to that because we got to figure out the competitive balance tax and whether it's $220 million or $230 million.
They've already agreed on it. It's happening. Bigger bags. It's happening. They're like, ready, break. Something accomplished today, guys. Yeah. Bigger bags.
Hey,
let's go. We can do this.
You know what would make baseball much better? Designated runner.
Okay.
Have a guy batting and then the other guy runs for him.
In high school, you can do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They could go to the combines and get some fast guys. Maybe get us some guys from
Baylor.
Would
give that guy a job who can't play football, but he can run the 40. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, the 80s did that. In the early 70s.
Can't catch, put him in that position.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Designated runner.
A.K.A. Billy Hamilton.
Designated runner.
We used to do that a lot when I was little, when I was younger, young pup, like 10, 11, somewhere around there. We used to have a designated runner.
Yeah. In high school, in Tennessee, you can do it. You can put a guy in to run and then put the other guy back in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Major League Baseball, once you put the pinch runner in, he's got to stay in the game. You can't put the other guy back in. But it's an interesting thing. If you want stolen bases, you could
designated
do that.
Designated runner. Mm.
Derek, there's a time when I could run, but those come and gone.
I need to see some video.
Exactly. Are we talking 30 years ago?
No, there was a time when I used to be able to run.
You were stealing bases?
Let's. I don't know about stealing bases. I could run, though. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate, what do you know?
First off, fellas, I need to put a disclaimer out before I do my This Is What I Know. This is in no way bashing anyone or, you know, not being in favor of your endorsements. With that being said, this is what I know. I think the universe is trying to tell me something when the team that you pick a player to score a goal scores 8 goals and you don't win, the universe is trying to tell you something.
I guess so.
Mm. Okay.
Thank you.
Is this referring to pick 6?
Yeah, pick 6. Because I picked, I forgot who I picked, and they score 8 goals and none of them came from that player. I'm like, what's going on here? Well,
what? Yeah, you took Janoa.
Yeah, I took Janoa.
I took Luke Cunningham.
You got 0 points.
I took Luke Cunningham. They score 8, and I got zip on that.
I'm like,
You got 0. I got Johansson. I got 1 point. Think about it. We just did
I was
points.
Sweating. I was sweating because I was
not
like,
goals.
If somebody took Yossi, uh-huh. I was like, if Darren took Yossi, I'm in big, big trouble.
Someone could take Mike McCarron
and
just goofing
around. I took him last week. No, the last time you did it, I took him, and I got 0 points. So I went away, and I was like, let me try something different. And I did Johansson, and I got a point.
Whoops.
Off an 8-goal game.
That didn't go very well. Didn't take
Let's go
advantage
to Eric.
And, of course, none of the 8 goals were scored in the first 10 minutes.
Exactly.
That was another question.
No. Eric, what do you know?
This is what I know, guys. Two things. Number one, I will not have a repeat performance like I did on Friday. But in all seriousness, guys, I tell you what, I am so glad that Art Briles did the honorable thing and resigned from the staff of Grambling. But it's sad that Hugh Jackson did what he did to drive off one of the most famous persons associated with that program and Doug Williams, and also tarnished the memory of Eddie Robinson with all the great things he did for that program. And to me, unfortunately, as long as he's the coach, Doug Williams was probably still never have anything to do with that university. So I think he ought to resign himself. I don't know if that's going to happen. But this is the guy also that just recently interviewed about the whole NFL lawsuit and Brian Flores deal. So, Hugh Jackson, shame on you. That is what I know. Y'all guys take care.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Let's go to Mike up in Gallatin. What do you know?
Hey, guys. So, this is what I know. It must be extremely nice to play for the Vanderbilt baseball organization when your only road out-of-conference trip is in Hawaii. They spent the last 4 or 5 days living it up in Hawaii, smacking around the rainbow. And that's all they got to do. Then they get to come home, and they get to continue to do their work at home. I know that out of conference, and once you get to the SEC schedule, that's where we're truly going to see. But it was nice to be able to sit back. And, I mean, for them, I'm assuming they got to have a great time while they were beaten up for 4 straight games, for the most part, destroying the team they were playing. I almost felt bad for them, almost.
Almost.
No,
yeah, Hawaii, they did a home and home a couple years ago, and Hawaii has had a really good team. They're not quite as good this year, and they couldn't hang.
Yeah.
3 out of the 4 games were pretty much blowouts. Yeah, it was 2-1 yesterday, game yesterday.
Is his name Enrique Bradfield? He wasn't just hanging out on the beach, just tanning. Did you see that catch he made?
Number 4 on SportsCenter's top
10. He's unbelievable. He is unreal.
An unbelievable catch. So he wasn't just out there surfing.
We were just talking about baseball and action. Now that's the kind of thing you need more of baseball. Right? You know, he's a throwback. The baseball used to have more Enrique Bradfields out there stealing bases, making great plays in the field, more balls in play. I mean, he is a joy to watch. He's the guy that when he comes up to the plate, you stop everything you're doing because you want to watch what's going to happen.
Designated runners.
And he can do more than just run, for sure.
Barrett, down in the borough, what do you know?
Back in 1984, in senior year of high school, when we went to see Judas Priest at the Municipal Auditorium, I would never in a million years thought that 38 years later they'd be promoting Judas Priest at the Municipal Auditorium. It's absolutely mind-blowing. But here's what I know. This one's for you, Darren. And you almost read this on Friday, but y'all got sidetracked at the end of the show. Your Southern impersonation is fair and decent, but you got to work on it, man, okay? You got too many syllables in there. You say shebable. That's one too many. That's 3. It's got to be shebable.
It's like 2 points.
One more time. Let me hear it one more time.
It can't be shebable. It's got to be shebable.
So it's really like 2.2 syllables. It's not 3.
So no Y.
It's not 2. It's just a little bit more than 2, but not 3.
Eliminating entire syllables to get to as few utterances as possible. And being a lifelong native, you can save a whole lot of time and rolling up the Woodburn. Happy Monday, gentlemen. Y'all have a great one.
Thank you, Barrett. All right. That's a good way to end hour number 2. We'll come back. We'll bring in our man Vince next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.